Hey, what's up? It's The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk, back after a day break. Doubleheader for the Cardinals yesterday. They ended up splitting against the Tigers. Fortunate as they were in Detroit, where they struck out 14 times against our old friend Jack Flaherty. That pained me greatly.
You had to expect it, though.
Oh, I mean, come on. But not to that extent. I told you on Monday that of all the former players that are having success out there right now, Tyler O'Neill, Jordan Hicks, of course, you go a couple years back and we've seen all-stars and Randy Arozarena and Adolis Garcia. Jack's the guy that I've taken a little bit more personally. I wanted that one to hurt a little bit more. I wanted to kind of make a statement as far as the Cardinals offense teeing him up a little bit, and especially Wilson Contreras, who received the brunt of some of Jack's complaints, and not saying it was all him, but you know, the circus that went on early in last season. But boy, he mowed the Cardinals down to an epic level. I saw a tweet today that the Cardinals put it out through their stats release. It was the first time since 1901 that there have been 14 Ks for a pitcher through 6 2/3. So he essentially just completely annihilated that lineup to a level that we haven't seen. And that's sad. That's sad for the Cardinals. It's sad. It's a sad state of affairs for this offense. I don't want to spend too much time on it on the front end.
You guys did get the last laugh on the scoreboard in that one.
In that game, yeah. Fortunate not to get swept because they were able to come back in that one. Lost last night, lost this afternoon. They're the lowest scoring team in the National League. It's a tough go right now.
Why is that? Is it just everyone's been bad? The names in that lineup should be better than this, no?
Yeah. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt hitting as poorly as he's hitting is one of the primary reasons. He's hitting, what, 230 OPS at 630. You also have Nolan's been not as great. The power especially not there with only one home run through the first month. And Contreras is actually, he's leading the team in OPS. He's got five homers. He has struck out a lot, and his average is decent. It's about kind of what we expected or saw last year in that 260 range. So he's kind of on par with what you would have thought. But, you know, eight doubles, five home runs. Mason Wynn, someone that really didn't hit last year. We knew that he was a phenomenal defender, is hitting 290 and has been pretty good with the bat. But outside of that, I mean, Gorman's struggling. Jordan Walker enough to get sent down. Nootbaar, it's been a small sample size because he had been hurt, but since being back, I mean, he's hitting 185. So there just has not been much as far as run production. And the series coming up between the Cardinals and the White Sox on Friday will feature the two lowest scoring teams in each given league. And baseball as a whole, it goes White Sox at the very bottom, then the A's and the Cardinals. I'm dumbfounded that the Cardinals are in that type of company right now. Yes, it's still early. Yes, there have been some bright spots with the pitching. The bullpen's been good. Sonny Gray's been awesome. Lance Lynn, his ERA is sub 3 right now. So for all the criticism that I was throwing out there, and Cardinals fans, alarm bells sounding when you get a guy that in his last start in the postseason for the Dodgers gave up 4 home runs in one inning and just looked to be on the very tail end of his career. So far, he's been rock solid. Kyle Gibson's been pretty decent. It's been Miles Michaelis. It's been really bad. And same thing with Steven Matz as well. Those guys have been punching bags. So on the whole, it's an underwhelming Cardinals start. It's once again in the range that we hated last year, tied right now with the Pirates for last place in the Central, and they're a below 500 team. So
you'd have to imagine that if this continues this way into the summer this year, that it's probably going to be a different approach.
Needs to be.
Come trade deadline. I mean, who would be the guys that Goldie?
Yeah, you'd have to trade him. I mean, he's on the last year of his deal.
A couple of those relievers, maybe.
I could see that. It'd be interesting. I don't know if you'd be in a situation where you wanted to ship out Goldie and Nato in the same cycle. I'd have to look up what Arenado's contract is. I mean, he still has a couple of years left where Goldie's up this year, and maybe it looks like it might have been a mistake last year. Yes, it's hindsight, and yes, it would have really dampened any kind of hopes of a turnaround if you would have done this at the deadline last season. But Goldschmidt being 36 years old, he was 35, 36 last year in the middle of the summer when the Cardinals were out of contention and having a pretty good year. And it was a chance to ship him to a contender, actually get a decent package back, and maybe in prospects, young talent, maybe a young arm that the staff could really, really use. But now that you've kept him and he's struggled on the front end, although he has, as we've talked about within this month, he's kind of traditionally gotten off to slow starts. So I'm not completely writing off any kind of resurgence here in May or June. I mean, that's kind of been who he's been. But he is on the older side. He is in his last year of his deal. And even though it didn't happen last year, yeah, if they're a non-competitive team and out of it, maybe it is the year you have to do it with Goldie. I don't know. Maybe the front office just bite the bullet and say, let's ride it out and let's pray for a last wild card spot and try to catch lightning in a bottle. I could totally see them trying to do that. And look, I mean,
it's like the Bulls strategy, and yeah, I just can't stand.
I know. And we're probably making too much out of 1 month. I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole and say it's over when they're five games out after 1 month of baseball. But there have not been real signs to grab onto that this year is going to be different. Other than Sonny Gray being electric when he's come back, and some of the other pitching's been better, and yes, the track record of Goldie is something I can be able to hope and forecast that he heats up, and Contreras is hitting well. Maybe Nato figures it out too, and I want to see what Jordan Walker looks like when he comes back from the minors. So there's still baseball to be played. I'm not writing the obituary for this season quite yet. It's just been very frustrating to watch. Especially in a way you're not expecting it to happen. I thought that maybe the starting pitching staff would collectively have an ERA of 5.5 or 6, and Cardinals would be losing a bunch of 9-5 games. But they struggle to put 3 runs on the board or more on a pretty regular basis. So, and then there's just the lingering thoughts of I've been out on John Mozeliak for a couple of years. I'm way past the point of being out on that. Ollie Marmol got an extension before the season, and they crafted it as, well, we wanted to get out front of what could be a slow start. You never want a franchise, especially one with the history of the Cardinals, the high expectations of the Cardinals, to preemptively say, yeah, this is probably going to be a rocky road on the front end. And guess what? They were right. But anyways.
Do you think this is it for Mozeliak finally?
It should be. It has to be.
But do you think it will be?
I mean, they're not a playoff team. It has to be. I don't know how you sell that to the fan base of missing the postseason multiple times in a row. And I keep going back to the stat. They've won one postseason series in like the last 10 years. I don't know how you keep status quo with that. Again, for a organization, I don't want to – I always try to reel myself back in when I say this. You know, I don't want to, because I know the Cubs fans are, oh, look at, listen to the Cardinals fan holding themselves in such high regard. But when you are
first losing season in like 20 years last year, let's put it in perspective.
It was like the worst season of my lifetime. Yeah, there is the context of, hey, teams have down years, and that happens for a lot of franchises out there. But when you're the Cardinals, when you're the Braves, when you're the Red Sox, when you're the Yankees, when you're the Dodgers, when you're, think of it in college basketball terms, because we are going to talk a lot of college hoops today. If you're a blue blood, or if you're like an Illinois, an Indiana, Michigan State, there's a different level of patience and or lack thereof than maybe if you're at Minnesota, if you're at Penn State, if you're a program that hasn't had the success through the years, and you could point to, well, yeah, you know, Look at his overall record. It's above 500. They haven't had very many below 500. See, that's not what teams in St. Louis are expected to do. Oh, well, they're just above 500. They just cracked it in the playoffs and didn't do anything. They were one and out. Like, it's supposed to be more than that. And when you've had, I think you've gotten breaks. I think you've gotten breaks with the Goldie deal, with the Arenado deal. Yes, you had to go out and make those, but you didn't have to give up much to get like perennial all-stars in the corners. And yes, Goldie's struggling at a.
The Rockies actually paid you to take Arenado. Yeah.
And we gave you Austin Gomber, who's just serving up bombs at Coors. Like, it was as good of a deal as you could have hoped. And you haven't taken that and turned it into a contender. It's just helping you prior to last year stay afloat. And now, I mean, you're at the bottom of the ocean here in the Central, even though you were just gifted all-star first baseman and third baseman.
There was no college hoops news to talk about.
No. You want me to go for 2 hours on this?
No, yeah, just keep going on the Cardinals. I love it. I love hearing the Cardinal tears sometimes. Hate to say it. Sorry, man. But
it's all good.
It's it doesn't bother me too much.
Sure. Lindy on the U of I Line Link text line. I'll say it, as long as Mo and Marmol are in St. Louis, the Birds will stink. Scott says it was over before it started. They stink. Marcus, Cubs will give you a bag of balls for Nato. Yeah, I mean, might need a little bit more than that, I would say. Nolan Nick Arenado, Madrigal, by the way.
You can have Nick Madrigal, maybe?
No, and that's not going to do it. That's not gonna do it. Take Imanaga. No?
I mean, I'll tell you what, the Cubs offense has been terrible, too, here the last like week and a half. I know their overall numbers are a lot better, but boy, everybody's ice cold right now.
Yeah. When you look at Nato, he's got the rest of this season, 25, 26, and 27. I mean, he's not going to be a free agent until 2028, and he's only 33 years old this year.
How much does he make per season on that deal?
35 mil this year, 32 next, 27 after that, 15 mil when he's 36, the last year of his contract in 2027. Won't be an unrestricted free agent until 2028. And he's got a full no-trade clause. It makes sense for the Cardinals to ride that out. You got to hope that.
Probably. His value is not where it probably needs to be right now to make it worth trading him.
Right.
Unless he really starts to heat up here before the deadline.
Which he definitely could. And oh, he's still one of the best.
And even gloves. If he does, then again, that makes you even want to, you know, keep him as a building block more. I mean, when it's that long term, if there's maybe 1 year left after this year, it makes more sense. But when you've got like 4 years left on a contract, it's probably pretty difficult to make a move like that. Whereas with a guy like Goldie, obviously, I mean, if you get to July 30th and it's over, I mean, the Cardinals are still in last place in the division, let's say, it really makes no sense to keep him, especially if he rebuilds his value here and he has one of his hot stretches and is the guy that he normally is. That gets you a pretty darn good prospect in that deal.
Right.
A lot of contenders would want Paul Goldschmidt added to their lineup for August and September.
I would think so. So I'd be fine with that. I hate that we're having this conversation here.
Yeah, normally this is the Cubs conversation every year. Join the club of talking about trade candidates on your roster.
But I
you
can't
deserve
even
to have to do this once. I mean, one time.
I can't even fathom the idea of trading Goldie and Nato and just being like in complete tear it down mode. Like, what does that look like? When do you come back up for air after that? I don't know. I mean, the Cubs did it successfully.
You got to spend.
Yeah.
To supplement. I mean, the Cardinals got some really intriguing young players. I mean, with Jordan Walker, with Mason Wynn, with Herrera. They got some other guys on the way. You spend and supplement that with some guys that are maybe more in their primes than Nolan and Goldschmidt. Pretty quick bounce back. Obviously, you got to address the pitching staff as well, the starting rotation. Maybe that's what you target in a deal for a guy like Goldie, is a mid to top tier starting pitching prospect, so that you can, you know, put some youth in that rotation alongside the 36-year-olds.
Right. Well, that's another thing with the Cardinals, is like when you see the farm system rankings and not to see them anywhere close to the top 10, they've had to.
They were, though, before Walker graduated Gorman graduated. And
fair enough.
A couple of these guys.
But the thing is, like, the Cubs are thought to be one of the best in baseball in the farm system. The Dodgers somehow, even though they spend a boatload of money and they trade to get guys, like, obviously a couple of trade deadlines ago, they did what it took to say, yeah, you know what, we'll take Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. And then we'll trade for Tyler Glass now, and we'll do what we got to do to load this thing up. We'll spend a boatload of money. And, oh, by the way, we just got a bunch of good talent in our farm system somehow. I don't know how they've done that, because it's not like they've been having high draft picks in the first round. But anywho, that is a fair point, though, that when you call that up. Like, maybe if the Cardinals were still sitting with Walker in AAA and Mason Wynn in AAA, it'd be a little bit of a different story. One of the things, though, has been a big difference between probably a decade ago and now is the lack of hope and easy guys to point to in the rotation, like young starting pitching. It just seemed like the Cardinals could continually cycle those guys through. Now, some of them didn't really pop like we thought they would. Like Michael Wacha had, you know, ended up being decent, and he's had actually some good years after being a Cardinal, but he was thought to be like the next Waino type, and never was that. Flaherty was supposed to be obviously a star, an ace, and even though he looked like one against the Cardinals yesterday, he didn't really turn into that in a Cardinals uniform. Carlos Martinez flopped for the most part outside of one all-star season. So that's been another thing that the Cardinals have really whiffed on. Part of it, I think, is if you're analyzing, and we've gone full-on Cardinals doom and gloom here, I promise we'll talk college basketball. But I think those people have voiced this accurately. I think that Mo is doing a poor job of spending the money that the Cardinals have, and I think that there have been some instances where obviously it goes to ownership too, the DeWitts, where why are the Cardinals like a smidge above league average in payroll? Like, why are the Cubs spending like 40, 50 more million dollars on their payroll this year than the Cardinals? That's one thing to talk about. Another thing is like their own player evaluations. Some of their drafting choices, some of the guys that they've picked that maybe haven't panned out, but guys who they've decided to trade. Like, they traded, I know it's easier to say in hindsight, but they've kind of traded the wrong guys at times, where they traded Gallen and they traded Alcantara and they traded Rosarena and Garcia, guys that have left and then popped and turned into really, really good players. Alcantara, Cy Young, Gallen in the Cy Young mix last year, and then All-Stars and Garcia and Rosarena. So I know, like you've been mentioning with Tyler O'Neill, that stuff happens, but it just seemed like when they all stack up.
Well, it's different when you're trading a prospect as somebody who you feel is expendable to go out there and get somebody who doesn't actually work for you, as opposed to a guy who had plenty of chances and you're just moving on from. Like a Tyler O'Neill, I mean, everybody that I had heard as a Cardinals fan was like, we're done with this guy. We just can't do this anymore. When you're talking about a pitching prospect or a young outfield prospect, like those are the ones that sting a little bit more because that was just a misevaluation by the front office.
Mm-hmm.
For feeling that those guys were expendable in trades, especially in those guys' situation. Correct me if I'm wrong on those deals. You had Ozuna was the deal for
Alcantara and Gallen.
Both of them?
Yeah,
the same deal. See, that's the one. That stings. Yeah.
And then now Ozuna's like, it's still early in the year. And he's been good, one of the best hitters in baseball.
He wasn't quite that type of guy for the Cardinals.
No, I know.
It wasn't like you were trading for Mookie Betts, you know, with right. Those two guys in which you could find, okay, so win-win for both.
Thought you were trading for an all-star and somehow he won a gold glove. Still perplexes me.
When he jumped on the wall 10 feet behind the ball, that's gold glove worthy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, outfield, unless you're playing center, like if you win the corner outfield gold glove, a lot of times it's like you're the best bad defender. It's just...
Right.
Ian Happ won one last year, and he was not good out there.
That's fair. Brian says on the U of I Line of Link text line, for what it's worth, a Cardinals Hall of Famer told me that when Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan left, it was over. Those two told Mo who to trade. They had the leverage. That's fair. It has seemed from the outside that now the front office and Mo have kind of had yes men there as – they've wanted that at the manager spot and obviously didn't have one in Mike Schilt and then decided to fire him after they made the playoffs. And Ollie just, I don't know. And maybe now they'll be, it does seem like they're in obviously a lot of sports situations, pro sports most notably, but even you see it in college, like the pivots of what you didn't do and then got proven wrong. Like maybe they hired outside of the quote unquote Cardinals family next. I don't know. I don't know that. Or they'll just be like, yeah, you know, Daniel Descalso, try to be our Skip Schumacher, even though Skip's currently managing one of the worst teams in baseball in the Miami Marlins.
Yeah, the Skip Schumacher allure has really disappeared.
I don't know how much it's his fault.
No, it really isn't, but yeah. It's still, I mean, maybe win more than six of your first 30.
Uh-huh. That'd be nice. That'd be nice. Let's end on a positive note on the baseball front. 205 mentions can Illini baseball get a talk for run ruling a top 25 team last night.
They're rolling.
Yeah, man. They're still at the top of the Big Ten standings, tied with Purdue. They're 11-4 in the conference.
Oh, you're telling me there might be a Illinois Purdue college sporting matchup with conference title implications on the line.
No way.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah, but they run ruled Indiana State, 24th ranked. Sycamores came to town yesterday, 21-11 in seven innings as a final there. The offense went crazy. And this is a Dan Hartlepp squad that started a little bit slow, but man, they've been lights out at home. 16-1 at home and 26-15 overall. So this has been great to see. And I think as you look down the stretch, you have Ohio State coming up this weekend. That's at home. And then you after that, you have another home series against Iowa. Iowa, a team that has been thought to be pretty good. I know their conference mark at 10-8 hasn't been outstanding, but that was a preseason top 25 team, and I know the name is escaping me right now, but they have their top pitcher is like a legit, I don't know if he's a first round prospect, but he was a former football player and now just solely a starting pitcher for them, but he's really, really good. Admittedly, I haven't followed it as closely as we got into, I dabbled a little bit on the front end in college baseball of following it, and then as we got into the heart of March Madness and can't even see past the shadow that the off season and the portal cast. But yeah, no doubt. I appreciate that as far as pointing out that they deserve a shout out. They do. 16-1 at home is pretty awesome. And a chance with back-to-back series in the Big Ten, Ohio State, and then Iowa coming up in consecutive weekends. That's going to be pretty exciting. And I should mention their final series then before the Big Ten tournament. There are three left. Ohio State, Iowa, their final one is on the road at, wouldn't you know it, Purdue.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be fun.
May 16th through the 18th in West Lafayette. So definitely deserving of the notoriety and the attention. So hopefully they continue this run and make their way into the NCAA tournament. I don't know. Do they do bracketology for college baseball? Do we have net rankings?
I'm not sure. That's a good question.
If someone knows,
who's the Joe Lenardi of college baseball? Let's get him on the show.
If someone knows better than us, please point us in the right direction. We'll try to fill you in on that. If you want to weigh in, you can. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Line and Link text line. Apologies for the Cardinals filibuster or rant or whatever.
That no big deal. Nothing happened in college basketball while we were gone.
There's not much going on. But on a serious note, new commit for Brad Underwood & Company yesterday. Coleman Hawkins has had an announcement, and that one is very interesting and a lot popping up in the portal right now in terms of news and guys on the move. So we'll fill you in all on that. We got to catch a break. We'll talk to you about college hoops next. This is The Drive.
Pia's is open. Catch all of your favorite MLB games on their big screens. Root on your favorite team wearing your Cubby Blue or your Cardinal Red. 1609 West Springfield in Champaign. Pia's offers not only a huge outdoor seating area, but indoor seating as well. Enjoy daily specials. It's the home of the Slugger Burger with buckets of beer and wings. Experience food, drinks, and fun at one of Champaign's best sports bars near Springfield and Madison, Champaign. Open 7 days a week. It's Pia's.
From computer systems to brakes and tires too, at PDR, fixing cars is what they do. Remember, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481 or use their dedicated text-only line at 383-0619. Additional information including repair quotes and online scheduling requests available from the website at pdrauto.com. Remember, they are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR.
As Tapman's Towing celebrates 50 years of serving Central Illinois, we're always seeking good people to serve our great customers. Our team of expert tow professionals would like to interview others with CDLs, previous tow experience, or a strong interest in serving others. If you enjoy serving people, love working in the outdoors, and looking for a career, not just a job, we should talk soon. Do you have a strong desire but lack the experience? We should still talk. Visit our career page at tapmanstowing.com.
The Alma Market is your one-stop shop for one-of-a-kind creations from the University of Illinois alumni and students, as well as unique finds from some of your favorite Urbana-Champaign area businesses. Treat yourself or a loved one and support your fellow Illini today. If you're a University of Illinois student, alum, or Champaign-Urbana area business, feature your products on the Alma Market. Becoming a vendor is a great way to expand your reach and connect with Illini across the country. For more details, visit almamarket.org. Go Illini!
Want unbeatable prices on your next furniture purchase, but also seeking that local hometown feel? Look no further than Kelsey Furniture in Tuscola. Customers rave about their friendly, established staff, as well as their great selection, amazing prices, and second-to-none delivery service. They're a third-generation local business, and they've always got your best interests at heart. Find the look you love for less. Open 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday, but always available online at KelseyFurniture.com. That's KelseyFurniture.com.
We all have a mission in life, something that drives us to explore, to grow, to love. And when we discover it, we're made whole. At OSF Healthcare, we want you to be the best you possible. We're here for you on your schedule to make your life just a little bit easier. Whatever your mission is, we're here to support it. Your life, our mission. Learn more at osfhealthcare.org/mission.
This is Rob Meyer with Provident Financial Group. We are honored to be celebrating 15 years of service and want to thank all of our amazing clients for their confidence and trust. We look forward to meeting the needs of current and future clients in the years to come. Contact us today at 217-366-3456 or find us online at providentfinancialgroupllc.com.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
The sounds of spring and the smell of flowers in the air, they all add up to Spring Green, America's neighborhood lawn care team. They become your favorite through quality service and professionalism. Spring Green will service and maintain your lawnscape with seeding, aeration, fertilizing, disease, and insect control.
Over 40 years of satisfied customers reflect their commitment to Champaign-Urbana and the Mattoon-Charleston area.
Call Spring Green at 217-359-2111 or online at spring-green.com.
You've heard about the doggy bag, right? From Bulldog Disposal Muhammad, a 6-cubic yard canvas bag that can be used for easy cleanup instead of a big dumpster. The one-time use bag is now available and you can save the delivery charge. Get the doggy bag at Do It Best Hardware in Champaign at 107 West Springfield. So fill up the bag, call Bulldog Disposal, have it disposed of, and you'll be organized. Go to bulldoggybag.com for all the details. That's bulldoggybag.com.
Back on the drive with Dan Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Let's switch gears to Illini basketball. Some news yesterday. I think it's a big one. Of course, you've got a decent amount of spots still to fill. Five remaining going into yesterday. Now there will be four because Ben Hamrickhaus, the forward from Evansville, has announced his commitment. 6'9", put up 15 points, 5 rebounds per game last year for the Evansville Aces in the Missouri Valley. Really, really impressive offensively. You look at his shooting numbers, 41, 42% from three. A guy that can make some plays off the dribble. We'll see how much that translates. I don't think that it's a complete situation where he'll have the same abilities in pick and rolls that he did in the Missouri Valley. But then again, you know, Marcus Tomas showed that you don't have to be the most quick and agile and explosive to kind of get where you want on the floor. If you can handle it, if you can use your body, if you can just have poise about you on the ball. So I do think that some of his playmaking translates, and he's got an ability to post guys up in the mid post, particularly when he gets a matchup that against a smaller defender. And I know that Brad's offense this past year was entirely, let's seek some mismatches, let's try to get a switch, let's post this guy. If they send a double, we'll kick it out and really space the floor. So I think that it was a great sell for Illinois to have the number three offense in the country last year, to have some bigger playmakers that they put the ball in their hands, that just show Ben that they had Marcus Tomas from the same league, a similar profile in terms of being a skilled, bigger forward that can slot into different spots, do different things with the ball in their hands, or in Ben's case, he's a knockdown, lights-out, spot-up shooter. I think this is a really, really good get for Brad Underwood and company. It sounds like Nova really pushed Illinois in terms of competition and aggressive NIL offer, both from them and from Louisville. Nova has to really rebuild their roster. They've 2 years under Kyle Neptune have not gone to the NCAA tournament. So I think that they're kind of on the chopping block there and need to get some things going so that there's some urgency. And Nova has been a program that has a really strong backing. And Louisville, obviously, with Pat Kelsey in year one, has been one of the teams that has been thought to be in that elite tier of NIL. It seemed to boil down between Illinois and Nova at the very end, but Illinois able to close this within a week of having him on campus. So, Kyle, what do you think as you add Hemrickhouse to the fold, kind of how he slots in, and just your overall impressions of Brad Underwood's latest addition?
Well, we went like 2 weeks without getting a transfer. I was getting impatient. Give me somebody.
You're not the only one.
My goodness. Yeah, that seemed to be the overwhelming reaction from Illini fans there. Uh-huh. But that hopefully will – I mean, this is a big addition for Illinois. I think he has the most offensive upside of anybody they've added. I mean, for as good as Kerry Booth is, I think, going to be, and for as intriguing as Kylan Boswell is going to be, I mean, this guy is a proven scorer, a proven shooter, and somebody that I was just impressed in the little bit that I watched of him. And I know you question maybe how much it can translate, but he's not just a guy that's going to spot up and shoot and that's all he does. Like, he can do some things off the dribble. You put the ball in his hands and he can create offense. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see how Brad uses him on offense. Is it going to be just you're slotting right into this Damask role and we're going to try to make you Marcus Damask again? I think he can do some of that. Like, he's not – obviously, he just doesn't quite have the craftiness around the rim and the mid-post game that Damask had. But I think he's a guy that you can run some things through, and the 41% from three on the volume he shot it, and he has some range too. I think – it's going to be fun to see coming off how unique Illinois' offense became last year. I think he fits how they want to play in that new mold, and the fact that he is 6'9", and there are going to be a lot of smaller guys matched up with him, especially if you even do slide him down in a bigger lineup and he plays the three alongside Booth in a center or alongside Merez Johnson and another big. I think that there's going to be some matchups that you can exploit there, and I'm really intrigued with his offensive skill set fitting into this offense that Illinois built. I think he's a great fit, and for a team that has kind of lacked the go-to scorer, I'm not saying he's going to be that guy. I still think you need one of those, but he's at least somebody who theoretically has the potential to be a top 2-3 scoring option on your team, and you feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think he's going to put up numbers for sure and will be an option that they want to get the ball to and get him looks. And I don't want to write off the idea that, you know, that he can make plays off the dribble. I do think he's going to do that. I don't know that they're going to maybe run as much in comparison to, like, Marcus Damask,
right,
like that type of thing. Obviously, having a point guard in Kylan Boswell gives you that asset to have a guy that you trust to initiate offense. But it does allow you – I've long said as soon as they got – Boswell, that I love the fact that Kylan has been effective off the ball, and he's a shooter that provides spacing for whoever is going to have the ball in their hands, whether they're trying to get downhill or they're posting up or whatever it might be. But that's something that I feel like he's just under control. That's where I feel like there are parallels between him and Damask. He's under control. He has a high basketball IQ. He uses his size well, and he's a better shooter than Damask was. I know Damask during the non-conference really struggled. He was a much better shooter than his overall percentages showed last year. He just, for whatever reason, didn't have it going from three. But Hemrickhouse can really, really get it going on those catch and shoots and ability to run him off of screens. And I know that I was digging through some of the analytics. 43% on catch and shoot opportunities on a pretty high volume. Also shot nearly 40% off the dribble. So it's someone that's comfortable pulling up and being able to do those type of things. I also feel like you can even use him as a screener and play pick and pop with him like that, because he has size. It's 6'9", 220. If you want to bring him up to Kylan and set a screen, and if you got teams trying to – if you switch it, then, of course, you can post him up. If you try to hedge it with the guy that he's being guarded by, he can pop out and slip the screen. So it just gives you a lot of versatility of having him in an offense. And even though we talk about the suitors that ultimately are in the mix, I think Indiana wanted him pretty badly, just at the idea of obviously shooting. He's a Indiana product, once they got Balo, it was really hard for them to make a good sell for him because they have so many knowns as starters with Mbako at the three and Renu at the four and Balo at the five. And I think he wanted a big opportunity, and Illinois obviously could sell him on that. And I do want to – it feels like after every edition we run this exercise, and I want to do it again. What's the starting five as of today, or how do you project that? But
what position do you think Rick Oz will primarily play, though? Because it does get kind of interesting when you think about – Kerry Booth, Merez Johnson, you're going to add another big, like a true big, mm-hmm. at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to be playing a lot of like three, you think? Is he that flexible? I mean, obviously defensively you're going to have some concerns.
Sure.
Guarding wings, but where would you see him?
I think that he's primarily probably a four, at least in terms of who you want him to guard.
Right.
I think that's the way I would see it. You could play him with Trey White. And Trey White maybe guards threes, and Trey obviously has some size to him, but Hamrickhouse at the four. Offensively, it doesn't matter as much because he is versatile and is someone that can play on the perimeter. You're not just going to probably, you know, straight post him against bigs, that type of thing. Can he play like a small ball five? I've heard that a little bit from the Illini camp. I wouldn't expect it a lot, especially, of course, it'd be matchup dependent. If there's a team that doesn't have a huge five or a five that's necessarily very good with his back to the basket. Like if I was playing Michigan State last year, I know that's an example where we're talking about probably one of the worst five-man situations in the Big Ten or anyone at the high manager level, I'd probably be fine with playing him against Matty Sissoko because I don't think that Michigan State's going to throw it into Sissoko in one-on-one post-ups and have a lot of success if they even try it. So could he be the quote-unquote five and in that type of a situation, yeah, I think he could. But for the most part, I'd want him guarding fours. I think when you get him into some more explosive wings and make him defend in space, I'd worry a little bit more about his lateral quickness or lack thereof. But I do think that one thing that I feel like I've heard a decent amount, and I do think it could help, is if you get a five that can really play help defense and block some shots at the rim. Because even if you get by him, you get by Ben, then if you have a presence around the basket, maybe that forces teams into those mid-range pull-ups and those type of things. I'm not saying that he's got feet in cement, but he's not the most laterally quick and explosive, although we'll see what Fletch can do with them here in a short time.
I mean, Damask wasn't either. I mean, and he
true.
You can get him to a point where he's not just getting constantly attacked on the defensive end like we saw with a couple guys, whether it was Goody, Damask last year. I think that is his offensive value is going to far outweigh that for Illinois, especially if he can shoot it the way he did and if Illinois can get a little creative with him on offense. I mean, you look at this roster right now and you're going to need a lot of production. Like you look at his 15 a game at Evansville last year and you're going to need to get him into the mid double figures probably as it sits right now. Obviously, mm-hmm. four spots open, portal still yet to close. What, midnight tonight? You have to send a text to somebody.
Oh my gosh, I want to talk about
you're going to be in the portal and you're good.
Yeah.
So there's still a ways to go there, but you're going to need a scoring. You're going to need somebody who can give you that type of you know, this is a guy that can score in the 20s. This is a guy that you can make a lead scoring option, I think. I think he can translate to that. At the very least, he's going to make shots. I think that's the floor you're getting is a versatile 6'9 shot maker, and that's really important as well, especially as you still have some questions about what a guy like Kerry Booth can shoot next year coming off his freshman year and, you know, what Merez Johnson's offensive game looks like. If you add more of a help defender, rim protecting five, then all of a sudden he really does become important offensively in your front court if you want to play like Brad Underwood played last year with Coleman Hawkins. And like you said, being able to run some of those pick and pops and being able to play certain lineups where you can stretch the floor. So I'm intrigued by him. I think it's a great addition. I'm probably as excited about him as I have been about any addition Illinois made so far. And based on the last Missouri Valley transfer Illinois got, I don't want to keep making the comparison because that's a lot to put on a guy, but I'll take Missouri Valley transfers every year if they're going to be Marcus Damask.
Marcus Damask, Rink Mast, Lance Jones.
Yeah. Get a pipeline going.
He wasn't a bad player for Iowa.
Just get a pipeline going every offseason, pick up the phone and say, which Missouri Valley guy you got for me this year?
Why not? Why not? Yeah, it was good to the Big Ten last year, and obviously Illinois is hoping that it's good for them at least this time around. I know Heath on the U of I Atlanta League text line asked the question. Ben did miss a number of games last year, pretty much a month. When you look late December through late January, it was a foot injury. I don't know the extent of that. I don't know what exactly it was designated as in terms of, like, was it a stress fracture? Was it a bone bruise? I don't know. I just know that it had been reported either as a lower body injury, but I think specifically I've seen it characterized as just a foot injury. But he did play almost the rest of the year, although they didn't miss two games, the final two games for Evansville in their – did they go to the – what tournament did they play in? Was it the CBI?
Did they make any tournament?
They played – it says postseason on KenPom. I'm guessing it was the – probably the CBI. I mean, they were only 16-17 at the end of the – maybe he just opted not to play. It didn't seem like he played in either of the games. They played two games. He played Quinnipiac and Seattle in the quote-unquote postseason, but he didn't play either of those. But anyways, yes, it was a foot injury that he missed a chunk of the regular season with, and he's an NAIA product. So he played his first 3 years in NAIA and then transferred to Evansville and then now has a COVID year.
It's a pretty awesome story to go from Huntington, an NAIA program, to Illinois in the matter of 2 years.
It's pretty unbelievable.
Very, very rare to see that.
Do you worry about that at all? Like,
I mean, I'd worry if he was coming straight from an NAIA program. I, you know, the 15 and the skill set, I'd question far more if it can translate. I think the Missouri Valley is a good league.
Yeah.
And I think that, especially with what we saw them do to just kind of mold their offense around what worked with Damask last year and not, you know, suit his game to the Big Ten and not put him in situations where he was getting completely exploited. I trust that they have a good plan for him, Rickhouse. And I just think when you can shoot it that well and you have that type of size with the offensive skill set that he has, that plays anywhere. I mean, that. There's certain things, like, you can question whether maybe he's going to be a ball screen ball handler in the Big Ten or whether he's going to be able to defend some of the better athletes in the conference, and those are fair, but I think at the very least he's going to score the ball at this level. I think that translates anywhere.
Shooting usually translates. I was going to say Duncan Robinson was a D3 guy that then went to Michigan, obviously playing in the NBA, not to just stick with the Heat organization. I know he's not with them anymore, but Max Strus played at Lewis University, D2, then transferred to DePaul and was a bucket getter there. And then, of course, has been on a Miami Heat team that was in the finals. And I think he was even starting for them. So
Jack Golke was in D2, and then he hits 10 threes on Kentucky in the NCAA tournament.
Good call with that.
Where did Andrew Funk play before Penn State?
Good call.
Small school for sure. Probably D1, but
I'll have to look that up. There have been a lot of stories, though, of guys making big jumps and it paying off. He played at Bucknell.
Okay, that's a pretty good program.
Who was the was it Riley Minix for Morehead State?
Yeah.
Their big man, who was a good player and even had a pretty good game against Illinois, was an NAIA transfer and played really well for Morehead State in his final season and gave Illinois a sweat for, what, 25 minutes there?
Until Dane Danger took over.
That's right, Dane Danger. Dane Danger will be playing with David Jones at Memphis next year. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did.
More to get to on the college hoops front. We'll talk Coleman Hawkins. We'll talk Cam Christie's in the portal. I know that someone asked that. What does that mean for Illinois? Is he a target? We'll get to your questions, 217-359-2255. When we return, stick with us. This is The Drive.